Okay, so welcome back, and welcome, if you haven't been here before, to Be You, The World Will Adjust. Today I want to talk about the first page of the infomercial, and you know, people often say to me, you know, are there any pages that are particularly more important than other pages? And I said no, but I said I do like the chronology in which they follow through. And so the first page, as I talked about in creating my infomercial, is you have to know what people should pay you for. You have to know what your value is. And I think we all underestimate ourselves, and we all tie ourselves to what our job description is or what our title is. I'm VP of blah, blah, blah. I'm a director of blah, blah, blah. And that's how we tie up our identity, as opposed to, you know, these are my skills. This is what I'm really good at, and this is what they pay me for. And so when I was in the process of building my infomercial, as I said in the previous podcast, you know, I had to figure out what is it people should pay me for. I just never had that answer. I kind of had an idea of why I was there. I thought I was getting paid to be a shit disturber. I thought I was getting paid to look at the world differently. And as I was trying to become more like everybody else, the higher up in the organization I became, the less I realized how the disruptiveness of myself was less desirable. And, you know, it was more sort of fall in line. And so I never really understood, because I never thought of myself in those terms. And as I talked about before, in trying to figure it out, I sort of said, what should people pay me for? And the best way that I did it for myself, and others that I've known have done it, is to sit there and ask yourself the question. When I look back over my career, my life, whatever it was, what were those days where you just came home and said, God, if I could just do this every day, it would be so fantastic. And for me, those things were so clear that they were so front of mind. They were almost tangible in my ability to touch them. And they were three things. They were recruiting people. And what I loved about recruiting people was that I never used CVs. I recognized early on the success of recruiting came from finding people that fit culturally, that finding people that fit understanding the mission, understanding why they were there. And later in life, as I've watched people get married, thinking about people in terms of, do they add to the party or do they track from the party, right? Having had a couple of my kids get married this summer, I can honestly say in both cases, and the third one's coming up, all three of my future in-laws add to the party. And I just had a good knack and a good skill to be able to understand people and sort of say, not look at them and sort of say, wow, they're fantastic. They're incredible. They may be those things, but that doesn't make them the right fit for this job. Just because you can't take a Ferrari engine and put it in a Volkswagen, or vice versa, you can't take a Volkswagen. So you have to understand what you're bringing things to. I was just lucky I had that ability. And over my career, because part of this infomercial is you state what you're good at, and then you educate people with examples about when you've done those types of things. So over my career, I'd probably hired over 500 people. I'd never really used a headhunter because most headhunters wanted a CV. And in fact, when I went to New York to build out the derivatives and the high yield business, I basically gave up most of my daytime responsibilities and just interviewed people all the time. I had two breakfasts a day, two lunches a day, two dinners a day. And in between, I was going to the gym because I would have a heart attack if I hadn't. And it was so incredible because I got to the point of interviewing so many people that I could tell before the starter was over whether the person was going to fit or not. And not everybody can do that. And it happens to be a skill that I'm very, very good at. But I never thought of myself in those terms. So that's the first one. You know, that's what people should pay me for. The second thing that people should pay me for is I can't look at a situation and not ask myself the question, why doesn't someone do this differently? Or why don't they do this, which they don't do? My wife would often say to me, whenever we go to a new restaurant, she said, have you found the owner yet and told him how to improve the service or the menu or something else? I am a perennial fixer. I look at everything in life. I ask questions. I never take anything as its status quo. I always think about things, how they can be better. And the number one thing about fixing things is it's the people. 99% of it's about the people. Businesses don't fail because they're bad ideas. Businesses fail because you don't put the right people in them. And the difference between having the right and the wrong person in the business is massive. The majority of the world is lazy when it comes to moving people. I was never afraid of that. I always recognized that I could hire people, so I never felt anybody had me holding me for ransom, that I couldn't afford to let that person go. And so I turned over a lot of people in my career, and people would probably say I was harsh and stuff like that because you fired so many people. But the reality is most of those people went on to better lives because they were doing something they didn't enjoy and they weren't particularly good at. So I was really good at that, and I had lots of examples of that. I had integrated the corporate investment bank at CIBC World Markets. I'd put the trading rooms together. I'd gone down and built derivatives and high yields, you know, at a time when no one else had done that in Canada. And those all got generated from the same thing, asking the question, you know, what can we do better? And what can we do that's not being done? And not being afraid to go out and search the answers. And then the third thing that I've been very fortunate in my career is I've had some really great mentors. And my own brother-in-law and my family, as we grew up in the family restaurant business, even though he was more kind of a status quo guy, and I was always trying to promote different ideas in the restaurant. And I had a great mentor in the name of Peter Campbell. And Peter was an interesting guy in that he was a great high school and college athlete, and then he developed polio while he was in university. And so he had these leg irons, and he walked with two canes. But he was brilliant. He was really brilliant, and he understood human dynamics and human motivation. And he taught me my first lessons about not wasting my time trying to make people better at the things that they're not very good at. And that if I'm relying on them to be successful in things that are really important, and I'm relying on the things that they're weak at, then I'm doomed for failure. And he taught me how to hire people, how to motivate people, and how to really make people feel good about themselves, because people that feel good about themselves perform at a higher level. They have a higher level of personal satisfaction, and they perform at a higher level in every single instance. And so when I look back, the third thing that people should pay me for is my coaching and mentoring. Because when I look back over my lifetime, of all the people that I've coached while I was either at Wood Gundy or at CIBC or the Bank of Montreal, many, many, many of those people have gone on to much greater heights, bigger jobs, more enjoyable, and they've all done it with the knowledge of exactly who they are, right? Not sort of, and why they're there, and not kind of thinking about it in terms of, well, I'll just take that job, you know. And I talk about one of them is a good friend of mine, Richard Nesbitt, who worked for me for a long time. And Richard Nesbitt's the best disaster recovery guy that ever exists. And he can turn mud into diamonds in a heartbeat. But the key with Richard is he needs the bandwidth and the autonomy to be able to do it. And more recently, I had been asked to speak at a dinner where he was being honored at the University of Toronto. And I recited the story about when Richard had left CIBC and he was between sort of thinking about what he was doing. A friend of mine from GRI, which is Global Risk Institute, called me up and said, listen, you know Richard probably better than anybody in the world. And I said, yeah, I would say so. And he said, so, and by the way, Richard's a controversial fellow. Like he is. And so he said, tell me the good and the bad about Richard. And I said, well, how many people have you spoken to? And he said, probably 20 to 30. And I said, so you know all the good and the bad about Richard. And I said, let me just tell you what's the most important thing is. Do not hire Richard if you're not going to give him carte blanche. Because the things you should pay Richard for is turning around an organization, having the financial acumen to fix things, taking big risk at big projects and big ideas. And I said, and if you're not going to give him carte blanche, I said, then he's going to fail. And it's not going to be his fault. It's going to be your fault. And he said, well, nobody gets carte blanche. I said, so don't hire him. So anyways, they ended up hiring him. He did an amazing job at the Global Risk Institute. Amazing job. And took it from one publication a month, one publication, a big publication a week, to multiple publications in every month, multiple conferences annually. He got the Government of Canada to increase the funding for the program, and he left it on absolutely outstanding terms when he left, and he found his replacement. But Richard's controversial. But now Richard owns that controversial. His infomercial, what people should pay him for. People should pay him for taking over a disastrous situation. And Richard now understands that about himself, and everybody else does, because that's how he describes himself. He is a disaster recovery executive. He's done it on multiple times over multiple organizations, and he now owns that. So he understands that in order to be successful in utilizing his skills, he needs to have the bandwidth to be able to do it. And under no circumstances, if he doesn't get the bandwidth, should he ever do it. Okay, so the takeaway thought for this segment of the podcast is, after you've asked people what they should pay you for, makes you makes the money, saves some time, take some time yourself, and when you get those answers, ask yourself the question, is that what I really enjoy doing? Is that what I'm really good at, right? Because sometimes, you know, people may pay you for something that you happen to be good at, but you don't enjoy doing. It doesn't turn your crank. So it's not only important to understand what they should pay you for, but what they should pay you for is something that you enjoy doing. Lots of people can do things that they don't enjoy, but they're never going to really excel at those things if they don't really enjoy them. The combination of enjoying what you're doing and being good at it and deriving self-satisfaction from it is at the end of the day your highest value and your most accretive value to anybody that's going to potentially hire you. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.